Welcome, Queens, to another episode. I've got a special guest with me today. I'm going to read her bio for you. I have with me Abigail Barnes, and Abigail is the founder and CEO of Success by Design Training, an award-winning entrepreneur, author, speaker, and corporate trainer on time management and productive well-being. She's also a qualified coach, and Abigail has over 10 years of experience in financial services marketing. She started her business after a shocking death, near-death experience on a work business trip in 2012 at the age of 32. She shares her experience as a catalyst for change and the inspiration for reprioritization. So without further ado, Abigail, welcome to the podcast.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to see where this conversation is going to go today.
Me too. So as I was walking this morning, I don't know if you've heard any of my podcast episodes before when I have a guest, have you?
Yeah.
Okay. So usually I ask 10 quick fire questions at the beginning. I was walking this morning thinking about the podcast that we had today. And I was like, well, I feel like we need time, which is interesting because that's your area of expertise, to go more into depth in your story and the other questions I have for you. So I've actually got only 5 quick fire questions for you instead of 10. So are you ready to just dive straight into those first?
Yes, let's go.
Okay, number one, your favorite food.
I love sushi.
Yum. Number two, the favorite part of your day.
I think it's the mornings for me. When the world's quiet and you're just, everything is starting to wake up, that pure potentiality of what could happen.
Same, love that. Have you ever been on a diet? And if so, what's the worst diet you've ever been on?
Oh my goodness me. I have literally tried every single ridiculous diet thing out there. And I would say the cereal one was the worst.
The Special K.
Let's not name the names of the brands and give them any more attention, but cereal for breakfast, cereal for lunch, and then dinner. And I've done like the carnival ones, the meat ones and everything. And all I will say, because obviously we'll go into this in the podcast probably, is none of them were sustainable. Not one. The thing that works for me now is the thing that's sustainable.
Yeah, I love that. Number four, describe yourself in 3 words.
Optimistic. The bringer of joy. I would say I can walk into a room and change the vibration of the room simply by bringing the joy. And maybe the time queen.
Oh, I love that.
Although that's not, that's self-appointed. That's not something I go out and say this. This is just what everybody says to me.
I would totally claim time queen. I mean, look at my Zoom name, Victoria Kleinsman in brackets, queen. Totally just crown myself on my own Zoom.
Amazing. Love it.
Okay, the last question. In one sentence, what do you want people to take away from this podcast before we go into it?
So I'm going to share a sentence. I'll explain it more later. But what I would love people to take away from this conversation is that it's your time.
Mm.
There's never been a better time to do what you want, to dare to dream and to put your dreams into action. And the clock of your life is ticking. So I'd love you to take away, it's your time. The time is now.
I love that. Before we dive right in, that's just reminded me, I went to a spa a couple of weeks ago and they had a big clock in over the swimming pool, and it was a real clock and it was working, but every single number said the word now. And I was like, oh my God, I love that so much. So the time was always now.
Wow.
But you could still see the time if you needed to be somewhere, you know?
Yeah, love it. Love it.
Awesome. All right, Abigail. So I would love for you to just dive in, first of all, with your story and share with us your near-death experience and then the truth you realized about time. I think I would love to start there, and then I'll ask anything that comes intuitively from your share.
So the story starts maybe age 7. I just knew me. I knew what I wanted. I knew who I was. And maybe like your audience, life was simple. But then things happened and I started to morph into who the world needed me to be and what the world wanted me to do in order to be able to fit in, to not cause too much of a fuss and to be a good girl. So I went to university, I did a degree, and I did a degree in marketing because I love marketing and I love understanding why people do what they do, why they buy what they buy. So I'm fascinated with all the psychology of it. And I went into finance purely because at the time there were lots of jobs in finance in London. And I enjoyed what I did, but there was always something missing. So I got onto this merry-go-round of chasing Prada, chasing parties, chasing Prosecco, chasing promotions, chasing pay rises. I don't know whether your audience can relate to any of those things, but what I mean by this is that there was always something else that I felt would give me the feeling that I was looking for. I had like a hole in my soul. And so then one day in one of the jobs, my boss came to me and said that we would send you to America on a work business trip. And this was the only thing I hadn't done in that checklist. I hadn't been flown to another country and experienced business class and all of the things that in my head I thought, whoa, this is it. I've made it. So 24 hours after I arrived in America, I was staying at my friend's parents' house. I had worked with her in a hedge fund. She had collected me from the airport. She now lived in New York and her parents lived in Boston, which is where I'd flown into for the work trip. And so we were supposed to be hanging out that weekend and just catching up and doing like the all American girl thing that we had talked about so many times over drinks in London. But I woke up that next morning, Saturday, with a headache, which wasn't a shock. I had had some champagne on the flight, some wine with dinner, and then obviously I'd done sort of a transatlantic flight. So I just thought it was just life. I pushed it a bit too far. But then symptoms started to come on very, very quickly. I felt sick. I couldn't make it to the bathroom. My friend had to offer me the dustbin. I'm throwing up in the dustbin and her mum walks past the bedroom door. Morning, girls, you ready for breakfast? Oh my God, what's going on? And all credit to her, rather than being shocked and disgusted, which probably is what I would have done seeing a guest throwing up in a dustbin, she phoned an ambulance, which at the time I thought was a little bit dramatic, but moments later when I suddenly couldn't breathe and I couldn't move and I was sort of physically incapacitated on the bed, the ambulance arrived and they took me to the hospital. So 24 hours later, I'm being woken up by the doctor after they've done all the tests and told that at the age of 32, I'd actually had a stroke.
Wow.
Now, this was not the answer to the hole in the soul that I was looking for. But they have that phrase in life, be careful what you wish for. Like the answers come, but the answers aren't always going to come in the way that you would necessarily want the answers to come. So to rewind the story a bit, when I'm in the guest bedroom moments before the ambulance crew come in, I couldn't breathe and I was laying on the bed and I thought, this is it. I'm going to die here in my friend's parents' guest bedroom wearing my Christmas pajamas that I'd brought with me because it was February. And but I haven't lived. This can't be the end. And while I'm laying there, I hit a kind of door. And I don't know if it was because obviously over the years we hear people talk about death's door and, you know, I'm at death's door and whether my mind just kind of went there or whether there actually is a door. I don't know. But I hit this door and Victoria, I was like, is this it? Why isn't the door opening? Have I died? Where am I? What's going on?
So you could see a door And what else, what color was the door? Like, did you know, was you like still in your friend's room or had you gone somewhere else?
So physically I was still in the room, but spiritually I'd gone somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I'm, so spiritually you weren't in your friend's room anymore.
No.
Just, you were lost out of that room and you were somewhere else when this door was there.
I'd left my body.
Wow.
And what color was the door? I couldn't tell you, but I want to say it was brown, just because I feel like it was all the cliches. But the big thing that happened in those moments when I'm hitting this door, I was saying, is this it? And a voice came back and said, we're not ready for you yet.
Wow.
And I was just like, ready for me yet? So I've not died. So I can still be alive. I can still, okay. And so then I literally went into a kind of almost mental begging mode of, I'm sorry, give me another chance. Please, can I have another chance? So this story is kind of very much 3D and 5D, let's just say. So 3D being the physical, my body is being dealt with, it is being taken to a hospital, it is being assessed, and they are working out how to keep it alive. But then 5D, I am being awoken from my life that I was living before in the matrix of chasing all the things that I thought was important, to being made aware very, very quickly of what everything was all about. And in those moments, I was, okay, give me another chance. I'm sorry. I've wasted my time. What can I do? And it's almost like the message that came back from them was, it's your time. It's your time now. And share this message with others that it's your time. Like the clock is ticking. And what I really feel like fundamentally I took away from this situation, and I apply it to everything, is we all come in one door and we all go out the same door.
Mm.
So what we do in the middle is life, is the experience, is the making the most of the time, is the maximizing the time. So if your audience are like most of the audiences I speak to, then the sentences going round and round the head will be, I don't have enough time. And
I'll be happy when?
I'll be happy when, which is a really, really big one. When I've got the money, when I've got the body, when the kids are in school, when, you know, when I meet the partner, when I do, when. Always putting off. And it's almost like in those moments, that was the realization that now, like you were saying, the clock in your spa, now is the time. There is no when, because time doesn't actually really exist. But anyway.
Wow. I feel that. And again, a little personal share from my wedding was almost 4 weeks ago now. And obviously a wedding is a big deal. Well, we perceive it to be a big deal. And for me, it was. And so like 2 years ago, you're like, oh, we get married in this date. And then we get married next year. We get married this year. We get married in 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, 1 week, tomorrow. And when the day came, and I know a lot about spiritual development and, you know, I'm still immersed in this work and always will be. And I remember thinking, right, I just want to be as present as possible in this whole day because I know it's going to go like that. And I remember just before I walked down the aisle, which for me was the most like biggest part of that, of our wedding day, I remember thinking, it's now, every single thing for the past so many years is all down to this thing that's happening right now. And I remember walking and not really being there and almost like watching my, almost like on a weird cloud or something. And then it was over. And then now it's 4 weeks ago. And that really gave me another perception on time, that it waits for no one. And to be in the present moment, because that's all we really have. But do you think people need to experience something like that after they've reflected? Or do you think someone can listen to this conversation and actually choose to look at time differently?
This is a question I get asked a lot. And 2020 has made answering this question so much easier.
Yeah.
Because prior to 2020, my answer would have been, you know, I'd hope that in sharing my story, it would give you some perspective, yada, yada. 2020 literally ripped the rug out from all of us. For those first few days, before people worked out how to navigate the situation that they were in and use the tools that they had, et cetera, for those first few days, we were all in that same place that I was in when I had my near-death experience, if you like, of, hang on, so what is going on? Something's going on. I don't know. Like, something's changed. Has it changed? And then some people chose to continue on the journey of, okay, something's changed and I'm going to keep exploring that. And others went back to sleep. And that's saying that there's anything good or bad. Like, we're all here in this lifetime to do different things, learn different lessons, and be the people that we came here to be. And some of us will get a wake-up call sooner than others, and some of us will need it several times. And looking back over my journey, I definitely, during my corporate career, had a knock on the door a few times, but I wasn't listening.
So you realize at that point after your stroke that everything you'd been chasing, I'll be happy when, and then the next thing. Because when we arrive at our goal, we automatically create another goal for ourselves. So we never actually truly arrive. We're always striving. After that experience, though, did you then choose to be happy now without the thing? Like, how did you experience that, the difference there?
And that is the million-dollar question. Like, you want the answer to be, oh my God, yes.
Mm.
But the reality is that in all of this, with the spiritual awakenings, the consciousness that we have or don't have, we're still human.
Mm.
Still get triggered by the things. We still get addicted to the dopamine. We still want to rewind the clock and have that experience again. And we hear the sentence, which I heard originally from Abraham Hicks, it might be from somebody else, but the better it gets, the better it gets.
Yeah.
But there's a part of us that's like, yeah, but that wedding day, that was a really great day. Can I relive it again? And when you get that all time is now,
yeah.
And like you said, you felt like you were on a cloud watching a rerun because you'd lived it out so many times. And this is the amazing world that we're in and the pure potentiality of living a manifested life is that we can choose to live in that all day, every day, or we can choose to not.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're in it and sometimes we're out of it.
And it's being aware of what we're doing and then choosing to bring ourselves out of it. So obviously Buddha says attachment is the greatest form of suffering. And I used to be attached to my body size, to what food I ate or didn't eat, if someone admired me sexually or not. Like, that's what I thrived for, like, my whole life, until I didn't realize that until I went through my journey. And I was like, oh yeah, I wasn't born to give men boners, but I thought I was because of all these reasons why. And with the attachment, if we're striving, even with positive attachment, like said wedding day, if I, and I'm not, because I know what I'm doing, if I choose to only consume thoughts and memories of the wedding day, which is nice because it's a loving memory, but then I'm not in the present moment. It's impossible to be. So then that's suffering in a way. So what, in fact, let me look at the questions you gave me, because I think we can really give some people some tangible advice and tips here. What do you see the majority of people you work with, what problems do people have with regards to their time management? So when people say, oh, I haven't got time to go to the gym, if that's what they want. I haven't got time for self-care. That's a big one with my kind of work. What would you say to them to change that?
Okay. Write this one on a post-it note.
Okay.
Where's your time management is the direct reflection of your self-worth.
Your time management is a direct reflection of your self-worth. Oh, yes, I like that one.
And when you really get that on every single level, what you're prioritizing is what you are saying is important. And I don't have is a sabotage, is an excuse, is a way to keep ourselves safe. And when we really explore this to the next step, and none of this is this is the shadow work. None of this is like painless work. This is the work. and it's the journey that we're all on. So don't put me in the camp of I've totally got this. Don't put Victoria in that camp either. All of us are evolving souls. Yeah. But when you really, really explore why you're telling yourself you don't have time to work out, to prioritize your mobility, to prioritize what you eat, and you really explore that and you dig down and dig down and dig down and dig down, so much of it is connected to a story that you're telling yourself about your worth. Because for me now, when I talk about working out, I talk about mobility, and my working out routine is just who I am. I will never say, I'm exercising today, I'm not exercising today. If you follow me on social media, I'm always asking, did you move your body today? Because movement is essential. Mm. I guess to answer this question with an analogy, if you think about this, when we're all born, we're given a rental car. Mm. I call our body, the vehicle, a car. And so we're given this vehicle. And our job is to look after it. Our job is to make sure it's maintained, the wheels are changed, that it's kept clean inside. How many times have you got into somebody's vehicle and there's crisp packets, there's cans of drink, there's
nowhere to put your feet, even.
Nowhere to put your feet, there's dog hairs, there's all sorts of things, no judgment. But this is your one-time thing. And the analogy is how we are using and abusing the vehicle, because there's no refunds. There's no exchanges. Yes, you can pimp it up. You can soup it up. You can change the paint. You can put new clothes on it. You can change the color of the hair, whatever. You can put makeup on it. But what we don't do, we can't get back. So for me, I don't have time. This answer is quite a long one, but there's many layers to it. I don't have time is basically saying I'm not a priority.
Yeah.
And so the question is why?
Yeah.
What do you believe about why your body isn't worth that maintenance? Because I guarantee you plug your mobile phone in every night. So your mobile phone is more important than your ability to move. And I'm sure you talk about this with other guests that you have on, like what you eat affects your future, affects if you're a woman, it's going to affect your menopause, your perimenopause, how much sleep you get is going to affect your mental health. Everything is connected. So it's almost like what you are not doing now is having an impact in the future, even down to a quick fix diet. So a quick fix diet where you might inject yourself with loads of stuff and lose loads of weight, you are going to lose muscle mass, and you need muscle mass in the future. You are going to affect your bone density if you're not eating certain foods, and bone density is what is going to stop you from falling over and breaking a bone when you're older. But all we think about is what it is right now,
yeah,
how I look right now, not how am I going to have the longevity. And I think this is one of the things that I took away from my experience, near-death experience, was literally, if you want to live another 30, 40, 50 years, you're going to need to change some things.
Yeah, especially for me, it was mental health. So I tend to live in the present moment with physical health and just follow my intuition. I used to be thinking too much about the future in terms of health, but then that became disordered for me. A lot of my audience are in the disordered eating category. But especially for mental health, if I'm not getting to bed to get enough sleep, if I'm not moving my body to feel good that day, I don't really think about the future. But how can you help us to perhaps think about the future at the same time as being in the now, in the present moment? Is it just a question that you'd ask yourself? Like, how do you do it for yourself?
So fundamentally understanding that tomorrow is impacted by today.
Yeah.
So your eating choices are going to be impacted by your mental health. Your mental health is impacted by your sleep. It's impacted by what you ate, when you ate it, what time of day you ate it, what mindset you were eating it in, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I'm obviously, this is your area of expertise, but I just will give a very basic. So it's all interconnected. And so the starting point has to be, how do I want to feel? And then we're building it from there, the habits, the actions. And it starts then fundamentally from the belief. And the belief, we have to ask ourselves, what do we believe is possible for us? So there's 8 common beliefs around time management that come up, like, I don't have enough time, other people's time is more important than mine, work-life balance is impossible, so what's the point? Well-being is a waste of time. I'll never have enough money to be able to prioritize myself. It's too late for me to start now. And the list just goes on and on and on. And when we start to really explore whose voice is driving the car, then we can unpack.
And start to question lovingly each belief that comes up.
Yeah, and go through that whole, I think it's Byron Katie's, like, is it true? Do I have proof?
How would I feel without that thought?
Yeah, which is very, 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 very helpful. And I think fundamentally one of the big ones is, will I be alone when I feel better about myself, look better in myself, love myself more, have the life that I want, manage my time? Will I be alone because all of the people who are around me that don't want me to do that, what will happen to them? So I think when I'm talking about the reason that we do what we do is self-worth, we have to question why we're making certain decisions and doing the things, and how is it keeping us safe, and how is it keeping us in the tribe, and how is it preventing us from being alone? And self-identification of the group that we're in, and the people that we spend the most time with are the people that we become. And if we're spending time consuming content on social media, what kind of a vacuum is that creating, and the unconscious biases that we live within and the beliefs that we have? And one of the big sentences that people will say is, everybody feels like this. And I'm like, okay, tell me 5 people. And most of the time there's only one. Tell you about one, but their brain has confused one with everybody. And then you leave your home and you walk out and you're like, oh, people all look different. People all wear the things that I thought I wasn't allowed to wear. And they do the things I thought I wasn't allowed to do. And they say the things I didn't think I was allowed to say. And then you question, why didn't you think you were allowed to? And that's been one of the big beliefs that I've had to re-repair, because for many years I wasn't allowed, because society shapes us, our family shapes us, our education shapes us, our religion shapes us, our culture shapes us, what is acceptable shapes us, the cultural norm shape us, etc., etc.
Yeah, wow. And so I work with a lot of mums. I'm not a mum myself, so I haven't got children. I work with a lot of mothers, and everyone's different, but the main priority when I work with clients is for them to take time for themselves, whether it's to go through the modules in my program, or, you know, do the homework that I've asked them to do. And if they're a single mum of 3, for example, they say it's very challenging because of time. Now, I haven't had that lived experience of being a single mum of 3, but I'm quite knowledgeable, and, you know, I'm always evolving and all of that. But do you work with mums, and how do you help mums specifically who have on the outside looking in actually do have, you know, routines where a child has to be at school at this time. And so they do have external responsibilities that they do have to fulfill. But then how can they, I kind of know the answer, I think, as I'm asking, but I want to hear it from you. How can they then make time for themselves because they honor and value themselves when it seems impossible?
Yeah, I love this question. So I'll call them caretakers, because sometimes it might be a mum, sometimes it might be a dad, sometimes it might be somebody who identifies in a different way. So for me, they tend to be the best time managers that I ever come across, and they don't realize they are until we start the conversation, and I'll ask them sort of questions around, well, do you worry about this anymore? No. Do you worry about that anymore? No. What about this? No. What about that? Because they simply don't have the time anymore. So they're very, very focused. And it's almost like in our first conversations, I'm giving them permission to do it the way they now do it. Because there was a life before the family, the commitment, the children, and then there's a life after. And the life before is very well known, and the life after, there are a million different ways that you can do it. But the reality is that's what you were doing before anyway. But to answer the question, so then it's about giving yourself permission that this is your way. And these are the things you are going to prioritize, and this is what you want to do. And then if they're very time constrained, when do you have time? So identifying when you have time and recognizing, obviously we said time doesn't really exist, but it kind of does. So we're always in this like flip-flop. But the reason that I'm bringing this back up is because once you set yourself down to do whatever it is that you're doing, and you feel like, I only have 15 minutes. When you remember time doesn't really exist, 15 minutes for you can be the equivalent of 15 hours for somebody else. Yeah. So it's a mindset shift. So for me, time management is very similar to money mindset, to any other abundance mentality. I have enough to do what I need to do now. So if they're consuming your content and they've got 15 minutes, that is enough time to get the message they need to get right there, right then.
Yeah.
And it's really going, oh, so I don't need to watch the entire 60-minute video to get the message.
Yeah.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But what you tell yourself is the reality that you create. So if you sit down and say, I'm going to hear exactly what I need to hear in the next 15 minutes, you will. Yeah. And then also a practical thing, we can speed up most recordings, and most podcasts I listen to at 1.5, 1.8 anyway. So
when I put myself on times two.
You put it on times two. Oh my God.
But when I put myself on times two, when I listen back, I sound like a chipmunk because I speak fast anyway. My brain is so, I mess up my words because I'm so far ahead that my voice can't catch up. Well, that's good advice. What I wanted to say as you were sharing as well, and I had this, not realization, but I've realized it before, but it's so true, that people will prioritize what's most important for them. You know, if you think back to when my audience, well, I actually have a vast range of different ages, to be fair. But if you think back to when you were like, you know, late teens, early 20s, and you had boyfriends and things like that, you prioritize in messaging them, meeting them, you move stuff around to do what you want to do. Whereas as we get older, and especially mothers, I see, we put people, like you said, we value other people's time more than we value our own time. We put people before ourselves, then we just say, you know, the excuse, we don't have time. But if someone said to you, if you have to find 2 hours in your day and then you'll get £1 million by the end of the month, they will find the time. And so it is what you really prioritize is what's important to you. So I guess it is linking back to what you've said. What do you want? Why are you not worthy of receiving that for yourself and making action steps to implement to receive that? And so how can someone, let's say someone's got a full agenda, whether they're a mother or whether they're not, and they've got a full agenda and they want to have more time freedom. You've got a few different formulas. I've not heard, and I would love you to tell me more about the 888 formula and also time audits. I've heard before do, delegate, delete, and that helps me a lot. Is that, can you speak to those things? And I'm sure they're going to help my audience. Yeah.
Okay, so let's build this then. So the 888 formula is the simplest way to divide your 24-hour day based on science and society. Mm-hmm. So science says that we need to sleep between 7 and 9 hours. So we call that 8. Mm-hmm. And society says that we need to be working 8 hours. So then what's left is our life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is buying the food, cooking the food, eating the food, cleaning up after the food, buying the clothes, wearing the clothes, washing the clothes, doing it again. It's time for our hobbies. It's time for our well-being and our exercise. It's time for our relationships. It's time for finding a relationship, being in a relationship, growing a relationship, ending a relationship. It's time for the family, starting a family, growing a family, life after the family, as in when they move on, then what happens next. It's the commute if you're working somewhere where you need to commute. It is literally everything that isn't work or sleep. And so we call the sleep pillar of the formula rest, because you can restore your energy and regenerate your energy through meditating, through mindfulness, and through other activities other than sleep. The average person needs 7.5 hours sleep. So when you think about the three buckets, if you like, immovable, then your whole job is, what kind of a life do I want to create? What do I want it to look like? What stage of life am I in right now? How much sleep can I get? And how much sleep do I need are the two things to ask yourself. And understand that if you've got a new family, a young family, you're not maybe going to get the sleep that you need for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But then what can I do to recharge my energy in between? Could I meditate for 8 minutes while the baby's asleep? And maybe that's the best that I can do in this period of time. So it's understanding where you're at. And then if you've started a new job, you might need to put more time in the work bucket. If you are, if it's month end, year end, these kinds of immovable things, you're going to need to want to work more. But the formula is an immediate realization of where you're putting your effort and energy.
Mm.
And I need to say that it is not a recommendation for, oh, okay, so my formula needs to become 888. It is dividing what are immovables. And so you work out what works for you. You work out what works for your stage of life. And we're calling this sort of creating your own formula. So that's the 888 formula as the starting point. Once somebody has then realized, okay, Abigail, I'm really not happy with what's going on. What do I do next? How can I move forward? Because I'm kind of frustrated, overwhelmed, trapped, slightly depressed, because now I've looked at these and I'm realizing that I'm totally out of balance with everything. So this is then when the time audits come in. So I wrote a book called Time Management for Entrepreneurs and Professionals, and it's got a 5-step process to help people to reclaim their time and turn their time into productivity. So step one of the process is to audit your time. And we recommend that you audit your time for 7 days. And this is going to help you to notice where it's going, what you're spending it doing, who you're spending it doing it with, how much time you're spending on social media, even though you don't really think that you are, who is demanding your time, like in your circle, who are you giving fish to rather than teaching how to fish? Who aren't you coaching in a way that would mean that they don't keep coming back to you saying, where's this, where's that, how do I do this, how do I do that? And some caregivers are much better at raising their children to be independent and able to support themselves and learn the lessons, and others find that they're spending quite a lot of time frustrated doing the things. But then the question one has to ask oneself is, have I enabled them to keep coming back to ask me, or have I given them the skills in order to be able to do it? And then if I haven't, why am I not doing that? Anyway, that's a whole other psychological conversation. So then step two is accepting that this is where you're at. Step three is analyzing what those results are and what they mean. Step four is making an agreement with yourself. This is it, line in the sand, no more. This cannot go on anymore. And then step five is the action taking. What are you going to do next? And so these are the five steps in my book. And this is sort of the work that I'm doing with people in the early stages of helping them to go from where they are, I don't have enough time, to where they want to be. It's my time. I'm allocating it how I want. This is how my life looks. And these are the steps I'm taking towards it. And like I said earlier, if you've only got 15 minutes, rather than being like, I've only got, go, okay, I've found 15 minutes, then find another 15 and another 15 and another 15. And before you realize it, you've found an hour.
Yeah, that's so powerful. It's reminded me of a recent client who her homework was to take at least 20 minutes a day to just be by herself, whether that was looking at a tree, having a cup of tea and just sitting with the tea, going outside, whatever it was. And she's been updating me in the group. And she's like, it was so hard to begin with to choose me, to choose herself. And now she's going off for hour walks. And it's like so interesting to see that she had, quote, no time because of all these children and all this busyness. And that was just a lie. You know, we talked about this before we pressed record. That was a lie she was telling herself because she didn't feel worthy of taking the time for herself. And the eating disorder loved her being busy and moving the whole time. So once she started to look at that, she's now gone from like having no time to like an hour a day and doing nothing or just doing something for her. And so it's so beautiful to see that when someone has that support and that reflection, they understand like what's going on, they can make that time, right?
And it's so interesting as well, this whole thing of when you're not doing something, you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, you're being.
Yes.
So you are doing something.
Yes.
And while you're being, you're allowing your body to recharge, to recalibrate, to percolate and process all of the different things. And you're allowing your intuition to switch on because the voice is being silenced.
That is the most powerful thing I've heard today. And it's so true. We're a human doing, we're not a human doing, we're a human being. And that's not my quote, of course. I can't remember whose that were. But that is so true. We need to be quiet in order to get the downloads. And also just to be with ourselves.
100%.
Right. We have 10 minutes left and I would love to go there and talk about quantum leaps and merging timelines. My audience can totally handle this. So give us what you've got in about 10 minutes or so. I want to hear how people can work with you and how they can find you before we end. What is quantum leaping? What is merging timelines and how can we do it? If you can cover that in a couple of minutes, good luck.
In 10 minutes. Okay, so scientists for years have been investigating time and what is time and how does time work. We've got Einstein, we've got all these different theories. We've got people who have been able to recognize the observer effect, that when things are observed, then they act in a different way, the wave patterns. So I won't go there because I'm sure you've had other people sort of speak about it, but just to say that everything is happening all at once. So when you get that, what you want is already done, you wouldn't be able to think it if you couldn't do it, which means it's already done. So there's another timeline where the person who you are becoming is doing it. So the work is to go from the person you are being, step by step by step, to the person you're becoming. And we do this by recognizing what is blocking us, how we're stopping us. how we're trying to stay small, to keep in the groups, the tribes, the way that people know us, the reputations that we have, the who will I be, who do I think I am, versus how I can manage everything right now. And when we get from this time point of view that we've incarnated in these human bodies right here, right now, in this time, but all time is the same time. And this is where then when I'm speaking to one of my mentors who is like just next level on this, it's almost shaman level. I'm like, okay, you need to stop now because you're blowing my brain. So, you know, the past and the present are the now. And I'm like, so are there past lives? He would argue that it's all now. So anyway, I'll leave that there. But so there's a timeline that we can see that we're living on, and there's a future timeline that we are becoming. So it really is about the ability, your ability to accept and collapse time to jump into it right here, right now. Because if I can dream it, I am it. And once you get to that vibration, then the intuition will guide you to send that email, write that proposal, pitch that thing, charge that price, ask that question. And anything that stops you, then again, that is reminding you of this is something to clear, something to clear, something to clear. So it's almost like we're ping-ponging between who we're being and who we're becoming.
Yes.
But who you're becoming is who you already are.
Yes.
Does this make sense?
Yes. I actually, not that we need to understand it, because some parts of spirituality and who we really are, the truth of who we really are, our brain does not, it can't understand. It's just too big. But so I get it. I'm going to say I get it. I feel that. And what I choose to say is I'm remembering the future. So if I have a vision in my business, in my life, whatever, more so it's business based for me now, I'm like, right, I'm remembering the future right now. This is already done. I'm choosing, my consciousness is currently choosing to focus on this present moment in this body as Victoria at 14:25 on a whatever day it is, afternoon. However, at the same time as this, everything's already happening at the same time. So it's a case of me choosing to be that person that I want to be now, because I already am her. But in this current physical manifestation of consciousness, like direction, if you like, I then need to take, I need to work with time in the 3D world and take an action step and an action step and an action step until I am her. Does that make any sense?
That makes so much sense. And then two things that were coming up while you were saying that, that we've already touched on in this conversation, is one of them is the detachment. If it's already done, it's done.
Yeah.
So we don't need to keep going to Amazon and reordering it. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? I'm ordering it again. I'm ordering it again. Universe is like, oh, you again.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe she's like not sure. Maybe she doesn't want that because someone's fucked up here.
Yeah, we've got 16 orders for this same thing. Okay, could you stop? And then the other part of it is there's no good or bad in the journey. And so then the experiences that we're having that are helping us to become who we came here to be in order to be who we came here to be are all a part of it. And so a simple analogy in this is if you're cooking a meal and you want to know what are the right ingredients to put in it for you to taste it in the way that you want to, you might need to make that meal 25 times. And every single time, a little bit more, a little bit less. And then you get the taste that's the perfect taste for you, but it's the perfect taste for you right here, right now, because everything's always changing. So it's almost like we need to fall in love with the fact that it's already done. The universe is here to give us everything that we want. And it will come faster, quicker, easier, the more we can detach from the need to do
Yeah.
And just be.
Yes, and be in gratitude in the moment. Ed Milette was someone who I used to follow a few years ago, and he said, and this has always stuck with me, he lives in blissful dissatisfaction, meaning he wants to continue to evolve and to continue to grow and to hit goals and all of that. So he's, quote, dissatisfied in that regard, where he's always wanting to be better, but he's blissfully, he's living in bliss in the moment, even when he hasn't got there yet. And so it's kind of, that resonated with me, like blissfully dissatisfied. So fully grateful, living in bliss, and you're wanting to evolve and you're wanting to learn as you move forward on the timeline.
And I think the big thing to like wrap it all up in a bow is to remember, as Abraham Hicks would say, words don't teach.
Mm.
And this is why, since 2020, when we have the ability to get out and about, to go around the world, to work with people in person, to go to events, to meet the people, we learn so much faster in the vibration of others. Because now our bodies have calibrated to another vibration, that literally being in the presence of people can calibrate you.
I feel that 100%. Everything is energy. Amen.
Yes.
So Abigail, how can people, well, we've got a lot of links. I'll post them in the show notes, obviously. How can people buy your book? How do you work with people? Do you work with them like as coaching or financial coaching? Like, how do you work with people?
Yeah, so I guess the best place to start is the book. We sell the book on our website. We also sell it on Amazon, and it's on all the Amazons around the world. So wherever you order it, it will come to you print on demand, Kindle, whatever version you want. And that is probably a good place to start. I think there'll be a link to the free chapter as well. So we meet you where you're at. And then we work with people either in groups or one-to-one doing time confidence coaching. And there's sort of three different levels. So we can work together for 3 months, for 6 months, for 12 months, depending how deep you want to go into whatever your time challenges are. And we will always start with a time audit. So you can do a time audit yourself. You're guided through how to do it in the book, or you can book a time audit with me on our website, and I will go through the time audit with you and create your plan, and you'll go for 30 days and implement it and have all of the breakthroughs, all of the support and everything, because it's only when you take the action that things will change. It's only when you try to design your formula in the way that you want it that things will change. And then we recommend 8 minutes for self-care activities is a great place to start, because you clean your teeth and that's about 8 minutes. So you've got physical proof that you can make 8 minutes for a necessity. So you will be able to make 8 minutes for something which currently isn't a necessity, but actually is.
I love that. Yeah, thank you for your time today, Abigail. Obviously, I'll link everything below. And that your book is called, just tell us the title of it. I've got it here, but just in your own words, so if they want to search it up right now.
So it's called Time Management for Entrepreneurs and Professionals by Abigail Barnes. But if you Google Abigail Barnes, something I have done, an interview, a podcast, a YouTube, will come up in the Googles.
Yeah, so you can find her there and also the links below. So thank you, Abigail. Sending you so much love. And also to our listeners, if you want to reach out to Abigail, please do so. Screenshot, share us, tag us in your stories, and I'll see you next week. That's enough.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh my goodness.